There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
At this time, we would like to recognize our honorable guests, Representative Bradley Byrne, Representative Martha Roby, former United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions, former Governor Bob Riley, former Governor Don Siegelman, former Governor Dr. Robert Bentley.
I have no plans to step down. We have done nothing illegal, and we're just going to continue to do our job every day. That's what we're trying to do.
Oh, yeah, he was there. Yeah, he was there. By the way, the picture, I do dig it. One pop around Twitter here has got the former governor sitting there on the in the grandstand there with other former governors. But he's on the phone. Who do you think he was talking to? Who do you think? Siegelman's not on the phone. Folsom's not on the phone. I can't see Riley in that shot, but I guess he's not on the phone, but there's Bentley on the phone. I don't know if it was before Governor Ivey got started or whatever, but he's there and he's on the phone. He's checking in with somebody, probably. Maybe a patient. Probably that. 108 FM Talk, 106.5, and Midday Mobile on this inaugural Monday, and it is it's good. It's good. Things are ready to move on in Montgomery. Session gets started in March. Of course, they have gotten started with all the pre-gaming up there. That's been going on for quite a while with members of the legislature and figuring out, you know, who's going to do what before they actually get started officially in March. Also, they had parties last night. They have a big invitation gala event tonight as well as the politicking is going on. Even though not officially session in Montgomery, the politicking is definitely going on. What was going on as well before the governor spoke, you had many other elected officials taking their oaths of office. We'll run through these. These are all fairly short commentaries from different names, you know, people you voted for back in 2018. First up, Baldwin County. No stranger to Montgomery, John McMillan, state treasurer, speaking today in Montgomery.
Rick, you got us off to a good start. Governor Ivey, Chief Justice Parker, other distinguished guests and elected officials and my fellow Alabamians, it's great to be with you all today. This is a great opportunity for this state, I think. Collectively, with experience and seniority, we have finally got a team of people in place that will begin to address some of the challenges our state has, and we do have some challenges to address. I want to thank outgoing Treasurer Young Boozer for the tremendous job he's done. Let me tell you, all of us as citizens of this state are indebted to him for the service that he's provided over the last 8 years. He could not be with us today, but he's already been texting me this morning offering his encouragement, so I'm grateful for that. Governor Ivey, members of the legislature, I want to commit to you that whatever knowledge, skills, and experience I've developed in my tenure in public service, I am committed to working with you all to address some of the issues that we have. May God bless you all with your endeavors and the citizens of this great state. Thank you so much.
All right. So comments there from State Treasurer John McMillan after swearing the oath of office. And by the way, nice shout out to Young Boozer. Remember Young Boozer when he was inaugurated and he rolled through with no script all 67 counties of the state of Alabama without missing a beat? Y'all remember that? We have to pull that video up. That was amazing. Next year, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth.
Governor Ivey, constitutional officers, legislators, and my fellow Alabamians, let me begin my remarks by expressing some deeply felt and sincerely expressed words of thanks. I would not stand here today without the support of my parents, Billy and Sharon Ainsworth, who taught me important life lessons, taught me faith and showed it by example, and continue to give me their unconditional love. My wife, Kendall, who's been one of my biggest supporters and stood by my side, has tremendous class and grace. We're fortunate to have three great children, Hunter, Hayes, and Addie, that you just saw, and they embody the words in Psalm 127:3 that read, "Children are a blessing from the Lord." The more than 1 million Alabamians who cast their vote for us and expressed their faith in our vision, we're forever grateful for the confidence you put in us. I pledge to work every day to earn the trust and confidence of those who supported my opponent. The campaign is over, the ballots have been cast, and now is the time for us to come together as proud and united Alabamians who are dedicated to make an already great state even better. Today we gather at literal crossroads of history in the shadow of two buildings, one that gave birth to the Civil War and another that launched the Civil Rights Movement. For much of Alabama's existence, the rest of the country has viewed us through the prism of these two events. And while it's right for us to recognize our history, well, let's not settle for being defined solely for our past. In this 200th year of Alabama's founding, let us resolve to give the nation a fuller, more vibrant, and well-defined view of who we are as a state and who we are as a people. Let us be known for the state that leads the U.S. in job creation, economic development, because our citizens possess a work ethic that's second to none, and a workforce development effort provided by our army of job-ready applicants. Let us be known as a state that demands excellence in the classroom and is willing to take the steps necessary to provide a world-class public education system. Our first-class pre-K program already leads the nation and provides a model that other states are following. So we should resolve to top every measure in K through 12, post-secondary, and four-year offerings as well. Let us work to be known as a state whose government is as hardworking, is honest, and effective as the citizens it seeks to serve. We must no longer accept corruption as a natural byproduct of public service. And we must punish those who violate the public trust from the local courthouse to the Alabama State House. If all of us in the shadow of this magnificent dome dedicate ourselves to achieving these high standards, our children, our grandchildren, and their grandchildren after them will look back and say, this is the moment when Alabama turned a corner and began the journey to reach its full potential. This was a moment that we embraced Alabama's future as well as its past. This was a moment that dawned a new day in Alabama. With your continued prayers and support, I know we can make Alabama an even better place to live, to work, and to worship. May God bless each of you, and may God bless our great state of Alabama. Thank you.
All right, so we're coming back. More comments from, we've got State Auditor Jim Ziegler. We have Secretary of State John Merrill and Attorney General Steve Marshall all taking oaths of office today. And give a little speech here on this inaugural Monday up in Montgomery. Although, heck, we got part of it this weekend. Governor had her party down here. The business is in Montgomery, but the party was down here. So it's pretty good. And then she mentioned us during the speech. She actually knows where Southwest Alabama is. This might be really a great 4 years.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 118 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Monday. By the way, too, when you see, if you watched it live or you go back this evening and watch the oaths of office, members of state government laying their hands on what is possibly the oldest Bible being used in the United States. John Sharp had a real great story on this over at AL.com. Said when Alabama Governor Kay Ivey and other state constitutional officers are sworn today, they'll place their hands on a piece of history that gets its own security escort to the Capitol. Alabama has a state Bible that's been used by every gubernatorial inauguration since being purchased in 1853. Yikes. Ryan Blocker, museum collection curator with the Alabama Department of Archives and History, said it's a priceless artifact in our eyes. They will show up. They bring it from the archives to the inauguration, and then I'm sure take it right back. Alabama State Bible is believed to be the oldest official state Bible in the United States, and was also used by Jefferson Davis as he took his oath of office as the president of the Confederate States of America in 1861, when Montgomery was the capital of the Confederacy. Connection to Davis and the Confederate past has created controversy in the modern era, but Blocker said there's been no discussion of quietly shelving the Bible for good. Blocker pointed out the state Bible first used to swear John Winston in as Alabama's 15th governor on December of 1853 predates the Confederacy and Alabama's secession from the Union in 1861. He says it's more of a state Bible than a Jefferson Davis Bible. But yeah, there's the Bible being used today, 1853, that they put their hands on. All right, go to more of the quick speeches here from those taking their oaths of office. And for many of these next, well, for all of these next three, a continuation of the job they were already doing. First, from down here in our neck of the woods, but speaking in Montgomery, his job with the state of Alabama of state auditor, here's Jim Ziegler.
Thank you, Governor Ivey, Chief Justice Tom Parker, elected officials, and you, the people of Alabama, who have hired us to work for you on a four-year contract. That 4 years of work starts today. I've been blessed to be your state auditor for the last 4 years. As of this moment, I am term limited. I am beginning my last 4 years of work as state auditor for you. We ask for your prayers as we work to be a watchman for better stewardship of the taxpayers' resources in government. Thank you, and may God bless the great state of Alabama.
Right on from state auditor to secretary of state, John Merrill giving his speech today.
As your 53rd secretary of state, it has been my honor to travel to all 67 counties. As a matter of fact, last year when I made the 530 visits to our 67 counties for the sixth year in a row and the seventh time, one of the things I constantly reminded the group that I spoke to of is that we want each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama to be registered to vote and to have a photo ID. As a matter of fact, since January the 19th, 2015, we've registered 1,184,682 new voters. We now have 3,478,810 registered voters in our state. And we've removed more than 750,000 people from the voter rolls because those people have either moved away, they passed away, or they've been put away. We think it's important for everybody to vote, but just one time. We just want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And we've broken every record in the history of the state for the last four elections for voter participation. We even go to people's homes if they need photo IDs and they can't go to the remote locations where we go. In the area of business services, we've reduced our workforce, our team members, from 49 employees to 39 employees, 25%. We've reduced the wait time for business filings from 7 to 9 months behind to same day for 134 consecutive weeks. And we've saved you $2,619,021.21 cash money as of last Friday. We're not operating at the speed of government anymore. We're operating at the speed of business. And we think that it's important for all areas of government to do so. We are honored to have the privilege to serve you in this capacity. One of the things that people constantly ask me is, why do you always put your cell phone number on your business card? And if you don't remember anything else I've said to you today, please don't forget this. I put my business card with all my numbers, including my cell phone, because I work for you. And it's important for you to remember that. I want to ask you to join me, to join our constitutional officers, to join our judiciary and our legislative branch to help us work together to begin to move Alabama forward. Under Governor Ivey's leadership, I have no doubt this will be the best 4 years in the history of the state. Thank you for giving me the privilege to serve you again.
What do y'all think? We take to calling him John Cash Money Merrill for Secretary of State. I don't see if I can put the next time we get him on the phone on the show, we'll reference him as Cash, but John Cash Money Merrill. We're running through, if you're just joining us, running through some of the speeches that preceded the governor's speech that we played last hour, as different members, either they were elects that became new to the office, or people that already held the job that were reinstated for another 4 years, and they took the oath of office, and then they gave short little speeches. Now we'll go on to the last in that collection here, Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall.
Thank you. It is an honor to serve as the 48th Attorney General of the great state of Alabama. And on this solemn occasion, it's only fitting that we reflect upon the duties of the office of which I hold. Under our law, Alabama's Attorney General has dual responsibilities. One, is to serve as our state's chief legal counsel. And two, is to act as our chief law enforcement officer. We have been blessed by our founders to live in a democracy, a representative democracy. You, the people, through your representatives, decide what the laws of our state will be. I, as the attorney for the state of Alabama, defend those laws against those who would attempt to suppress your voice. This is a serious responsibility because the sovereignty of the state of Alabama depends upon it. The people must have a zealous advocate in the courtroom to defend their duly enacted laws, and I pledge to you today to be that voice. While defending Alabama's laws protects her sovereignty, enforcing Alabama's laws protects her people. It's been said that the highest duty of government is to protect its citizens. Indeed, the first civil right of every person in this state is to be free from the fear of violence. As Alabama's chief law enforcement officer, that responsibility starts with me. Working hand in hand with our state and local law enforcement, we've targeted violent crime across our state. In fact, today, hundreds sit behind bars because of our unrelenting efforts. And we will continue to pursue justice, and we have only just begun. Today, as I begin a new term, let me be clear. I will never back down from enforcing our laws, no matter the situation, no matter the consequence. Likewise, I will never use the law as a means to political ends, nor will I confuse the idea of law and the fact of power. My loyalty will be to the law itself. I pledge to always fight for you, for your laws, and for your safety. In my over two decades as a prosecutor, I have never backed down from a fight, and I will not start that today. Every single day that I have the honor to serve as your Attorney General, these are the things that I will fight for, and that fight will not end. So help me God. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless the great state of Alabama.
All right, so there is Attorney General Steve Marshall giving his speech today in Montgomery. And that's it. They are doing the parade thing, I think wrapping up the parade in Montgomery. Now it's down to, before they start getting back to work, right, they've got the gala events tonight, the parties. They had parties last night, tonight the official events as well in Montgomery. Even though session doesn't get started until early March, believe me, the politicking already going on in Montgomery. That's why we do what we do. We keep our eyes on it. And by the way, too, we are enhancing our coverage of Montgomery this year. I'm going to roll out the details the next couple of weeks, but you know, we keep a pretty steady eye on Montgomery during session, giving you daily reports, what happened Tuesdays through Thursdays, but if it warrants, on Mondays and Fridays, even when they're not in session. But we'll watch what happens during session. But we have some more help we're going to bring in this year and give you daily updates on what happens, because there are so many things that were not dealt with last year in session. It was election year. Come on, can't be dealing with it then. Even though it was although surprisingly, 2018 was fairly contentious, even though it was an election year. But this year, so many things. I heard the governor refer to the infrastructure, which is gas tax, right? That's going to be part of that discussion. Also, the discussion of prison reform in the state, that's going to be a heavy lift. The governor did not mention the lotto, but the lotto is already there and ready to roll. I mean, this is a Republican-backed lotto bill that they'll be moving forward with, plus Medicaid expansion. There's a lot going on in Montgomery. I know you can always say that, but this year even a bit more than normal years. So you have all the stuff that moved from last year to this year, plus all the things that would normally be on the docket for this year. And I guarantee you, they're already making all the moves and plays right now they can before session gets started in earnest. A couple heads up here before we head to the news break. Saw this post from the folks at Dauphin Island Police Department. They said, for the next few days, Mobile County Sheriff's Flotilla will be manning an observation point on top of the Dauphin Island Bridge. Please be aware and use caution on the bridge. I would guess that's probably having to do with those two fishermen that were lost last week. This is my best guess. That's not an official. That's just my take on it. But they do say that Sheriff's Flotilla will be manning that observation point on top of the bridge. So be aware. And so if you're coming and going from the island, make sure heads up. Although you always should have heads up there, whether it be a bicyclist or another car, or well, the Pelicans decides to hover right there at windshield level. You know, just be aware when you cross the bridge. All right, we come back from the break. We're going to do a couple things here. We'll talk to Mike Bunn from Historic Blakely State Park. They've got a run coming up, inaugural run. Speaking of inaugural things, they got an inaugural run coming on January 26th. We'll talk about that, what's going on at Blakely State Park. In addition, we'll get a replay of that interview with Jeff Poore from earlier this morning. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile. Y'all stay close.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 133 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Y'all say hello to Mike Bunn, Director of Historic Blakely State Park. And usually we're talking about historic events going on, or we're getting out on the waters around Blakely Historic State Park. But now you're going to make us run through the park, although a lot of people do that for fun.
Yeah, sure thing. I think we can combine a little bit of both, Sean. We've got our inaugural Battlefield Blitz at 5K and Fun Run scheduled for January 26th. And the neat thing is, of course, it's a fundraiser for the park for our special programs and projects. But it's also going to be run on Alabama's largest Civil War battlefield. You'll literally run on the site where that famous charge took place April 9th, 1865. So that's a unique venue to have a fundraiser, and I think it's going to help us out a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what's cool is we just hiked through there with the Cub Scouts a few months ago. It really is just a great place. I mean, even if you're on the trails or you're on one of the bigger roads in there, there's so much to see. And, I mean, it's really the topography is cool. I mean, it's got hills in there like you don't expect in South Alabama.
Exactly. We are definitely not a flat park. I've had people who are not familiar with the area, that knew our work, asked me about the terrain, said, well, I guess it's kind of flat and level. And it's like, not at all. To tell you the truth, we've got a lot more ravines than we have table flat land here. But we'll be running through a little bit of both in the 5K run. And the neat thing is, tying it back to what I was talking about with local history, is the fact that it will be run on the battlefield, but it'll also be run on a portion of the battlefield that features the one section of that entire 3-mile-long line of earthworks at the park that we will have reconstructed what all the obstructions that were placed there in 1865 looked like. So that's the one part of the where the race actually starts. You'll run right in front of the most faithful reconstruction of the Civil War battlefield at Blakely anywhere in the park. So it'd be a kind of a unique venue, and we're going to start the race with a Civil War cannon firing and all that. So we're trying to expose people to our history, and we're trying to raise some money for a good cause, which is operation of the park through a way that people are already utilizing the park.
I support it big time because it is a really, really a gem right here in our backyard. If people have not been to Historic Blakely State Park, you owe it to yourself and your family. Do it quickly. I love the place. All right, tell folks they want to get signed up for this run. How do they do it? Where do they go?
Go to BlakelyPark.com. Go to our events page. You sign up online. We got over $20 for pre-registration. There'll be $25 the day of the event. And you can learn everything else that you want to know there, just blakeleypark.com, event page.
Great stuff. We can't wait to see you out there. And if people have not been out the park, even if they're not going to come run, I suggest y'all get out there and take a walk through the park. But get out and see it and enjoy it. Mike, thank you. We'll check back with you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Bunn checking in from Blakely. Y'all, seriously, I mean, if you've not been in a while, what a great venue. How lucky we are to have that right here in our backyard. Get out and enjoy Blakely. But if you want to strap on the running shoes and do it too and raise some money, I think that's a great thing. All right, let's get to the interview from this morning. I mentioned Jeff Poor had done a story about a young KL and Ivy back in Camden and what her fellow classmates had to say about her chance going forward of being governor. This was from back in 1963. Right now, speaking of talking to folks, we check in with our buddy Jeff Poor, who, of course, you read in Lanyap and Breitbart News, yellowhammernews.com, and also host of his own radio show now. He's into the radio ranks, and he's cursing me every day that he does it up at WVNN in Huntsville. Jeff Poor, live from Montgomery. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for that blight on my resume.
You joined the ranks, man. I love it. I'm happy about that. Remind folks, too, if they want to check the show out, they can go online to WVNN.com and get the stream.
WVNN.com. It's on the iHeart app or the TuneIn app as well. So 2 to 5 every day. Weekdays.
All right.
So, definitely worth checking out.
All right. So you are on location today away from the home studio. You're in Montgomery for the inauguration of Governor Kay Ivey for her first full term. She was down here in our neck of the woods over the weekend celebrating with that party down at Gulf State Park. And I want to kind of get some talk about that. Also saw the story over at the ALNewswire.com that 1963 high school yearbook prophecy said Kay Ellen Ivey has just been elected governor. Tell us more about that story.
So the way she was a graduate of Wilcox County High School in 1963, and the way they do, you know, the high school yearbook prophecies, it was a little different the way they did it. It was one of her classmates had written a letter to two other classmates. At the very end of this letter, kind of going through what everybody's doing now, the letter describes a celebration down at the town square in Camden. And the reason why, come to find out, is that KL and Ivy had just been elected governor of Alabama. So they I believe the date was 1980, so they missed it by a couple of decades, but they did call it. So she was I guess she was on this track kind of to look like she was going to be involved in public policy and public service throughout her high school days and then into her college days. And obviously she worked in Montgomery and then state treasurer, then lieutenant governor, and now governor of Alabama.
Yeah, this destiny angle is pretty interesting. I mean, you have that prediction from the high school yearbook that, like you said, a couple decades late, but did come true. But yeah, she went straight from, being a member of the class government in high school. You mentioned Auburn. She went in there and did it there as well.
Well, let's keep in mind, Alabama had not had a female governor. This was before William Wallace was elected governor. So I think the prophecy looked at her as like kind of a, she was going to be the one that broke the glass ceiling. I guess she was that impressive at Wilcox County High School that they thought, well, she's better than any of the guys here. She's going to be she's going to be the one that becomes the governor of Alabama.
And then she took that, like you said, went to Auburn. And I want to talk about how it kind of comes together today, because you're talking about the procession today as the governor's inauguration parade will happen there. And you're looking out a window along the parade route where you said it's already been shut down and cordoned off. And the Auburn marching band will be there. You marched in that parade as a member of the Auburn marching band. And you said that KL and Ivy was a member of that marching band as well.
Right, University of Alabama marching band. I believe Alabama State. All the sort of big colleges participate in it because it's a state event. But I assume she marched in. I know she was in the marching band for her time at Auburn. I was only in the marching band for 2 years. I got to march in Governor Dodd Siegelman's Inauguration Day parade. That tells you how old I am. But given that she's an alum and that she's participated in this occasion once before, I would assume that it's going to be much like it was when she was with the state, the major state universities marching bands.
By the way, too, you need to check out the story by going to yellowhammernews.com or checking out my Twitter feed where I popped this story up from Jeff, because you'll see the pictures from the yearbook and all that of then young KL and Ivy and the predictions made. Here she is now in 2019 and elected governor of the state of Alabama. Now, this is interesting as well. The ad that was put out, I think, during the general election, remember, I thought was so very compelling, where it had this photograph of young KL and Ivy sitting at Lurleen Wallace's desk and saying something to the effect of, I guess I'll never get to be here, or something like that. And I mean, it was such a great, great ad they used back then. But this is somebody who seems to have been, to say it, predestined maybe for this day.
Well, I think she's always kind of had her eye on the office. I remember when she ran, you know, she attempted to run once before, then as things sort of changed, it didn't look like she was going to win the nomination. I think maybe it was 2010. She went to lieutenant governor and ran for that successfully. But she's always looked to me like she's kind of had her eye on this office. If you've known her, she's also been a very just kind of coming along in Republican Party circles, like a very popular figure in the Alabama Republican Party. You know, she was the one that college Republican groups always wanted to have come speak to their meetings, and she was like very much more accessible then and very much more involved then than your average sort of up-and-comer, I think.
Just joining us on to Jeff Poor. He is live in Montgomery today at the inauguration, officially in the parade. Right now, you said a prayer service going on?
Yeah, so there's prayer service underway right now about a mile or so from here, and then right now, the streets are kind of blocked off around the Capitol. If you're familiar with Montgomery, Dexter Avenue is kind of the main stretch that goes from the Capitol steps all the way into the downtown part of Montgomery. And that's, you know, everything around that's sort of blocked off. There's a few cars going through here. I think there's some people that have to work. But my assumption is that if you work in the downtown Montgomery area, you probably have the day off just because of the congestion and things like that. But the swearing in isn't until 10 a.m. That's when she is sworn in, and that's when all the other constitutional officers are sworn in as well.
Yeah, it's going to be, and I want to kind of get you to lay some more of the paint the picture for us. But yeah, it's not only, I mean, of course, the top office of the governor, but folks like, you know, that are lieutenant governor on down the list, they will be sworn in today officially as well.
Right, Ainsworth, Ziegler, Steve Marshall, the Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, State Treasurer, all those state auditor, those people are going to be sworn in. But that's really what's been going on. I guess you know that she had her kind of pre-party in Gulf Shore Saturday night, and then like last night, that was like when the real sort of, that's when the legislators rolled into town. They had different parties hosted by the different groups and interests, and you know, people got their photo op with the governor, some of the members of the state house and state senate, and some of the others, you know, the John Merrills and people that you recognize around state politics. They all had different parties around town, and then I think tonight's like the more formal things like that, and then that's when, you know, then things wrap up after that.
All right. Can you hold on over the news break for us? Because I got a few more questions for you.
Sure.
All right. Talking with Jeff Poor. He is live in Montgomery as it's inauguration day. Yeah, governor had her party down here, but the serious business and the parade going on up in Montgomery. What about the challenges that Governor Ivy may face going into this first year as a official full-term governor of the state of Alabama? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Talking with our buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap and Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. Of course, Jeff Poor on the radio now. He's stepped into it big time with us. He's on afternoons on WVNN in Huntsville. But today you are live on location in Montgomery. It is Inauguration Day, and you said your view. Where are you set up, Jeff?
So I'm currently at the Doubletree there. You know, it's between Madison and Monroe, kind of wedged in there. Back behind the main drag on Dexter, but I'm up high enough where I could see over some of the buildings over to Dexter and see the police cars and the roadblocks and things like that.
So they already have the parade route shut down?
Yeah, they shut everything down around 6 a.m. They weren't allowing any traffic through except for people that either lived over here or worked over here. I can't think of where the residential places are there, maybe a few apartments or something like that. But to me, for a Montgomery rush hour in the morning, the streets are pretty deserted right now.
And it's something I have not done before. I've not been present at a gubernatorial inauguration for our state. I think I need to put that on my to-do list to check out as you have the inauguration and then the parade as well. And like you said, the parties the night before, the parties will go on tonight as well. And that's all kind of seamless as it gets ready for sessions starting in early March. Let's talk about this. When KIV ascended to the governorship, and take it over. Expectations were, I think, for a lot of people, just to not screw it up. It had been so embarrassing with Bentley in there, and it was, hey, this is a new day because this person's not going to embarrass us like the previous governor. But now she caught the car. She was elected. She's got a term ahead of her. So there are, I think, fairly some expectations of the governor going forward.
Yeah, and mostly right now we're talking about the sort of legislative agenda. She's, the governor, unlike other states, isn't quite as powerful in Alabama as it is in a lot of other places. But what she's been doing, and I know this because behind the scenes she's been pushing for all the things you do in a new quadrennium, which is mostly the gas tax. She really wants the gas tax. She's working behind the scenes on the gas tax. I don't, people want to think that the lottery is going to be the big issue next session or this coming session. I'm not so sure. I'm sure there'll be some kind of a lottery bill that makes it through, and maybe even, the public will get a vote. But everybody seems to be pointing to this gas tax rate hike and, what that's going to look like. The thing about that, though, is nobody, including KIV, has really said what that is, what they think it's, the details, the number, what the money's going to be used for, how it's distributed, all the details. But she's really working behind the scenes, the twisted arms. And here we are, it's January, session's not until March. They had the organizational session last week, but that she's that far ahead of the curve trying to get this thing going. I think that kind of tells you where we're about to have a battle over that, and I think the devil's in the details on that one.
Yeah, but it can be done while the governor, again, not as strong as some other states versus the legislature. The governor can, through the fact that the governor speaks and the cameras show up, right, through the bully pulpit, the governor can set some kind of pacing and direction that if the members of the Senate and the House don't deal with, at least they're on record for not, they could say, here's what I want to see happen. And if people are behind them, kind of puts the members of the legislature on notice.
Yeah, I think so. This governor, the media like to kind of track her and see what she has to say. And I mean, you never did shorts or KIV clips on the evening news. So she'll have that ability, I think. But I don't know where that opposition to it would come from. We had this last election and a lot of these members ran on infrastructure. Uh-huh. And I know for sure that the governor ran on infrastructure. Now there was, I think, maybe one or two of the GOP candidates running against Ivy in the primary that lost. They brought up the idea of the gas tax and how Ivy's going to raise your taxes, but it didn't gain any traction. So the fight over whether or not we should have a gas tax or hike, I think, has already fallen, and the pro-gas tax hiker won. But my suspicion is that the real fight's going to be over what it all looks like, because we haven't heard anybody talk about it. And just to add on that real quick, when we start talking about Grover Norquist anti-tax pledges and how conservatives shouldn't be pro-tax hike, whoever the first person out of line doing that in the state legislature, look for this. That person's going to be the person that didn't get things the way they wanted on whatever agreement winds up coming forward to get a vote.
Yeah, explain that to people, because you and I have talked about it before. I've mentioned it a few times on the show, but I said, like Jeff has said, the devil's in the details here. In other words, the gas tax goes through, but when they didn't get what they wanted, what does that mean? Is that how much money their area gets, or what are you talking about?
Yeah, there's all kinds of ideas about how to distribute the money. Some think that you ought to leave a percentage of the gas tax revenues collected in said county in that county. Obviously, not all of it that's collected in that county, but a percentage of it, because essentially a gas tax is a use tax. It's people that are using the roads there. They have to drive to get to that gas pump. They're the ones wearing out the roads. Therefore, if the money, if the gas is pumped there, they likely use the road, and that can be, those proceeds can be used to improve those roads or build new roads or however, you know, the locals see fit. But if, I think if, like, the other details, like if I don't get my road project earmarked, or if I don't get, you know, a bridge project or whatever, and I have to deal with ALDOT, which is a terribly difficult bureaucracy to deal with, is my understanding. I think that's when you start seeing people cry foul, talk about Republicans not being pro-tax, and we've lost our way, and this is what happens with one-party rule. It becomes, at that point, they can oppose the gas tax, and it's more politically beneficial to do so based on ideology than opposing it because I didn't get my pork or whatever.
Okay, well, and this is, I mean, you're talking about the one-party rule, though. I've watched this. I said, look at this. It's the natural state of politics is to be battling it out. So even when one party in control, like the Republicans have been here in Alabama, the different cabals within the Republicans show up, and then they fight amongst themselves.
Well, here's what's going on in the legislature, and I've kind of realized this now, being a kind of in the Mobile realm and in the Huntsville realm and lived all over the state. The divide isn't the party. The divide's geography right now. It's North versus South Alabama. It's, you know, and there are groups in this state that aren't afraid to, like, say, hey, they're going to waste your taxpayer money on a bridge for those people at the beach, or say things like that while you're sitting in traffic on I-65 downtown Birmingham. They're building a nice wide bridge across the canal to Orange Beach or Gulf Shores or whatever. There's a weird sort of, like, all the North Alabama guys kind of hang out, and all the South Alabama guys hang out. They may agree on abortion, on guns, on all the hot-button issues, but when it comes to what the priority should be, particularly on infrastructure, then you start seeing these geographic sort of weird divisions within the state legislature.
See, y'all, it's not just me that says that. It's Jeff saying it. And that's the reality of Montgomery, that they'll campaign on these things that are not even the province of state legislators. They kind of campaign on national issues, but when it comes down to it, the split is absolutely a local split. And that's why I was wondering, is there any tell, or am I just searching for some low-hanging fruit here? When Governor Ivey has her party down here in Southwest Alabama, you have Tony Kennan commenting that he thought it was good and they have a good working relationship. Are things, maybe, is Kay Ivey somehow better for Southwest Alabama than previous governors?
I think so, because she doesn't really come from a that Birmingham aristocracy, or you know, she's not from the even the Bob Riley wing from East Alabama that kind of gravitated toward the Vestavia Hills and Mountain Brooks and all that. She's been a creature of Montgomery, and in this circumstance, she's not really tied down to certain parts of the state where the what we used to call the big mules, you know, were all at. That I think is, at least to me, and this is something I've kind of noticed in the campaign, is she's aware that she's governor of the entire state of Alabama, and she's going to all these places. So, you know, I followed this governor around to, like, Butler, Alabama, to you know, these places in northwest Alabama, Gouin and Winfield. She gets out of Montgomery, and she gets out of the big population centers. My biggest beat during this this last gubernatorial election, and the thing with the way the GOP candidates did ran against Ivey, they spent all their time in Birmingham, and obviously that's where all the votes are, but that tells me that's where they see they need to make their political hay, and therefore that's where they're going to sort of push for the priorities to be, you know, that, you know, Birmingham's going to get more economic development, and maybe, you know, to some degree Huntsville. I think Huntsville kind of does it on its own. But yeah, this could be, and it looks to me like right now that she's not going to be really focused on really bettering one area over another.
That's good news for us down here. And once again, y'all, go check out the story over at yellowhammernews.com. Jeff Poore, the absolute Alabama reporter extraordinaire, that has a story. It has pictures from the 1963 yearbook from Wilcox High School. Man, I'm just great reporting, great digging on that.
Yeah, man, thanks. And yeah, it's worth checking out. There's some, a little bit of context to some of that as well.
It's good stuff, Jeff. If people want to catch you online, where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right, Jeff Poor checking in. And yeah, that's going on today. The proceedings going on in Montgomery for the inauguration. We have coming up today, inauguration ceremony, and then the parade's going to go from about 10 this morning through who knows how long it takes to get the party going there in Montgomery. I guess the parade could last a long time. You know, I don't think they have any throws, though. You know, as a nod of the hat to Southwest Alabama, if they would have throw some moon pies during the parade today.
There may be someone who just jumps in.
Starts throwing stuff in.